was an on deck with JP Morgan and such like. So we're seeing this hybrid model coming through. So then I wonder what FinTech 3.0 will look like. And my prediction is that most of what I've seen in FinTech right now, where it's succeeding, is serving markets that were previously served badly, like small businesses, like students, like people who didn't have access to the financial system full stop in Africa. So a lot of the real FinTech innovation has taken place around underserved and poorly served markets. And then where it's actually working with the incumbent institutions' operations, it tends to be smoothing the friction of those operations and actually making it just easier to work with, like the Stripes of this world. So the idea of replacing the banking system in the next decade, to me, is pretty unlikely. And then the question is, how much of the banking system will be lost in terms of the profits to the fintech innovators? And I'd say that that's actually going to be quite significant. So the real challenge for the banks is, where do they make money in the future? And that's where the losers will be, those banks that are complacently ignoring this space, of which there are many. I got a figure recently, which is that of 109 biggest banks of the world, looking at their annual reports, only 43% have a leadership team that have zero technology background. So the leadership executive team of the banks have zero understanding of technology. They understand risk, audit, compliance, financial services, but they don't understand technology. Another 34% of those 109 biggest banks of the world only have one person on the leadership team with any technology background or experience. Only 3% of the 109 banks have someone who is a CEO, who has at some point been a CIO, CTO, or some form of technology operation, which, considering we're in the fintech world and fintech 3.0 is probably going to be reconstructing the business model of financial services using technology, is pretty damning as an indictment. So the losers, for me, are the banks that don't get technology. And I could talk for another 23 minutes, but I ought to hand over to Jay, I think, to get some views around how do you see the landscape playing out from here?
I think there'll definitely be a different, depending on the time frame. I would be very long still on the lending market, the alternative lenders that are being creating. As soon as we can figure out the liquidity markets, providing enough capital to these guys, I think there's a clear opportunity for those that do have deposits, very cheap deposits, to be a primary source that hasn't quite been a match made in heaven yet, but I think that a lot of large banks are waking up to that, because I think those alternative lenders have a unique skill set that unfortunately most of the large incumbents don't have. First and foremost, just the efficiency of acquisition, the efficiency of servicing. So I'm very long there, but in the interim, as we've seen serious challenges, it's gotten a little bit better in the last couple months. But some headlines certainly don't help that, like what has happened with Lending Club. That's why my first one, I wanted to pass to make sure we have enough time for everybody. Your first.
Thanks, Jay. So I think just, I'm just going to take a bit of time to give a shout for Startup Bootcamp, which I've been around. And just everybody that is early stage and looking for an accelerator, they are closing their inscription in London in 26th of June, so feel free to see them in the corner, or I see Michael on the first row, and you can also ask him some questions. Going back to the future of fintech, last year I was putting some numbers together, and in Q1 of last year there was around $200 million per week of investment that was going on this space. I was recently doing some updates, and this number I've also doubled per week. So we see sustainable investment that is coming there. And we talk a lot about this fintech investment, but to the point of Chris, what we sometimes not look is, what is the investment that is going into bank in order to digitize? And I talk for Lloyds Banking Group, where I work, which is one of the main banks in the UK. But our transformation, we committed to a transformation program, which we designed 10 journeys that are the most used of the customer. Like, I want to buy a house, I want to set up my mortgage, my business. Sorry, I'm getting a bit tired. And this investment in total is £1.7 billion that have been over a period of 7 years now, and that is still running over the next 2 years. So it has been for us a sustainable journey where we've constantly moved the branch and telephony process in the channel, and we have moved from that and accepted that our customer always want more and that we need to meet their demand online. So currently we have 12 million customers in the UK that are using our online platform. We have a high level of engagement with 95% of them that use servicing. And I think, you know, like as a director of innovation, a lot of people ask me, what are your innovation on the product? What is the next cool thing you are doing? And after 3 years doing the job, I also came to the conclusion that the role of innovation working in a large organization is about supporting the ecosystem. It's about being part of the type of events that we have today that is amazing, but it's also about working together with the other financial services player, with the VC, with the government, about how do you meet the customer need continuously, how do you offer frictionless access to your banking and offer services that are always more secure, more resilient, where there is less fraud in them. How do you offer, you move away from a transaction model to a much more, you know, enriched and adapted model, real time, which is what the customer wants and what goes on the back of it in terms of infrastructure.
I think it's important to talk about what fintech means in general. We're talking about fintech like it's a brand new thing. And actually, fintech started in the 1950s, at least in the US, with the first payment processors that began to move money digitally. And banks have been adopting technology ever since they were able to do so, whether it's digital general ledgers they were using to manage their accounts, or whether it was algorithmic underwriting, which is actually not a new thing, or the ability to obtain credit reports electronically. So banks have been adopting technology and licensing technology for a very long time. And those companies that started those businesses in the 70s and the 80s are now huge companies that provide technology services to banks, like First Data, or Fiserv, or FIS, and these are companies in the US. These are technology companies. Now, they're using old technology that we all think is kind of crappy, so we are moving to another generation of technology, but fintech is nothing new. Alliances with banks is nothing new, and I personally believe that the rumors of the deaths of banks is greatly exaggerated, and you've heard me say that before. So I think that banks will continue to adopt technology. It will always be frustrating. They will always be slow. They will never be as nimble as the new players in the market, but we need them. Banks have access to customers. They have access to data, the flow of funds, to the regulatory schema in whatever geography in which they're operating. So I think that they will remain an important part of the ecosystem.
I just to challenge, not to challenge, but to complement your point, Catherine, I think it's right, but what we should also not forget is the pace of adoption of technology by the citizens of the world. And you know, like when I look at our 12 million online, they are part of a 30 million population, and 18 million of them are not online. And this morning I was talking about financial inclusion and digital inclusion, and we know that 5.9 million of the people in the UK don't use online services actively. And we know in our population of SMEs that some of them, you know, still have more offline businesses and they are less comfortable about online. So I also think there is a period of transition that need to happen over the next years.
I mean, it's an interesting opening in that banks are really just old fintech companies, as Catherine said, and they have evolved and changed and adapted over time with technology. And one of the key things that most of the guys in the banks that I deal with who are non-technologists say is that because banks are licensed and regulated, that's one of the biggest challenges that they deal with, but equally it's the biggest barrier that the fintech guys have to deal with if they're trying to come into their space. So do you see any, and Catherine, maybe start with you, do you see any possible unicorns or existing unicorns out there that are going to do anything that will really eat at the core margins of bank business?
I certainly wouldn't say it's the lending businesses, and I'm not saying that just because I'm in it. There's a lot of talk about how companies like ours aren't regulated, but the fact of the matter is we're appropriately regulated for the business that we do. We're regulated as a lender. We don't take deposits. We're not regulated as a depository institution. I think many banks think perhaps we should be, and that's a different issue. But as long as the regulation is appropriate, I don't find it to be a significant barrier for our business, but I think the ones, and I don't think we're a significant disruptor, there's some revenue loss. I think the distributed ledgers actually are more likely to create a greater challenge to banks, because those money center banks that make a lot of money off of the way they move funds and the speed at which they move funds and the amount of dollars on which they sit, I think that potentially is a much greater threat.
Yeah, I mean, the shared ledger structure, actually, the banks see as being the big opportunity for reformation of their infrastructures to save money. What's interesting about the lending markets is that, and you said that you're bullish on the lending market still, Jay, is that the US lending market's very different in terms of marketplace lenders to UK, for example, and that most of the source of funds comes from institutional investors rather than from individual investors. And equally, as you mentioned, you've seen a slight stumble recently because of that structure. But one of the things that Prosper said to me is that they believe eventually we'll have a global marketplace lending platform structure. So it won't be US domestic, it won't be UK domestic. And again, maybe, what's your view on that globalizing structure?
Well, I think probably that Prosper comment, the fact that they have more institutional investors, just has to do with the fact that they're just much more mature. So once you pass the $1 billion mark, the individual funding market just isn't there. I mean, you need to scale these things up, so you've got to go after the big pockets. And that's where it just hasn't been very consistent. Right now, the lenders that we or the marketplaces, the lenders that we have in our own portfolio, it's already global. I mean, they're getting money from all over the place. It's not just from the US. I think the investors seek the best returns no matter where they can get them, and they are already global. And that's been also part of the problem with the inconsistency of the liquidity in the market. Catherine, I probably guess you might have some perspective on this also. Just you might be feeling some of this.
Well, of course, the securitization markets have been a little wobbly lately. But again, that's not a new vehicle. Credit card securitizations were occurring in the 90s. So, and that was global also with global investors. So I'm not sure, again, that this is something that's brand new. We're just sort of rethinking something that we've used in the past.
Yeah, there's been some I told you so's out there.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Always plenty of
those. Don't meet American Banker right now.
Claire, maybe touching on the UK a little bit, because we're both based out of UK. But one thing that's been interesting is that there's about 40 brand new banks that the regulator's encouraging through the process, from the Atom Bank that's already launched to the Starlings, Mondos, Lintels, the list goes on, Tandem. I mean, they're not all going to succeed, Seco, just throwing another one. They're not all going to succeed. And so how do you see that playing out? I mean, and equally, I think the challenge that you've got is that they're all saying they can do this without branches. Are they going to ever challenge the incumbent banks with that model?
So I think, there is, well, when we look at the challenger bank, generally they are more digital-led. And I think benefits is they challenge the status quo in terms of customer experience and what do they offer as a customer experience. As they don't have legacy infrastructure, they can push further the boundaries when it comes to integration or API play or big data. They don't have to necessarily worry about the legacy, and also because they don't have the scale yet, they can go faster and experiment and test and learn faster in the population, in niche environments. But back to my point before, when you offer banking at the level where a Lloyds Banking Group will offer across our different brands, up to 30 million employees in the UK, customer in the UK, you need to be very inclusive in your approach. And I actually think, innovation have a role to play in inclusion. So how do you deal with the customers that are feeling less comfortable when they are online? How do you, we hear the stories about people that not necessarily want to download the mobile banking because they're like, okay, what's going to happen? Can people get my credential? Funny enough, I share a personal story, but I received an email of my mom this morning and she told me like, oh, I found this cool startup that enabled me to exchange keys for €12 rather than, £90 that I need to pay if I was using an offline system. But I need to put my credit cards in the website. Is it secure or do I need to set up a PayPal account? Was literally what was on the email. And, I share a personal example, but I'm sure you all have examples that are like that. So during the transition, there are a lot of people that just want banking to offer simple services which are secure, which are easy to go. They want to be able to engage, you know, in a face-to-face conversation. I think some of the specifics around, for example, debt financing and debt consolidation are very difficult to do in a digital context. I wish, you know, personally, it will be much more easy. But the reality is, like, we have staff that is specialized in order to do that, and it just happened in a branch context.
So I'm going to throw the same question back to Jay and Catherine, but slightly rephrased, which is that I was at a New York conference last week, and one of the audience members came up to me at the break and said, wow, you've got so many new banks in the UK being launched. How come we haven't got one? And I said, well, you have. You've got Goldman Sachs Retail Bank, GS Bank. Why isn't there a brand new digital bank startup in the States?
What about Simple?
That's not a bank. That's a front end.
They are now, because BBVA acquired them.
There's the license under there. I think it's more complicated right now if you want to want, and even the Simple guys started with trying to go get a charter, but that's not so easy. I think the FCA seems, I don't know why they want to push 40 new banks. It seems irresponsible. But in the US, it's a bit more difficult. You can't even buy one that easily. I mean, I would guess that's it. The number of bank sponsors, the Bancorps, the now BBVAs and the others, that's a pretty new industry. So there's not a lot of banks that have been that have a very good history of being the underlying bank. And for the most part, they're all very small. They're not very technology-driven banks. So all the guys that are trying to build on top of them, there's just a natural sort of disconnect that they've got to try to fix the underlying bank that's under there to try to build a good product on top of it. There's compliance issues on top. It's just more complicated.
Maybe. Or maybe it's the regulatory structure. Anyway, talking of these things, a couple of years ago, we were really saying that all the fintech investment from the VCs were going into the marketplace lenders and into making payments easier with the Stripes and Squares of this world. And then the last bit was probably going into mainly improving bank operations, providing specific personal financial management software, for example. Then more recently, we've seen the widening of that into specifically blockchain and the shared distributed ledger structures that we've discussed earlier in the previous panel, and also into robo-advisors. Where do you see other developments that are exciting or of interest? Maybe Catherine, are you seeing anything out there that you think, here's another market space for fintech that's not yet developed? I mean, insurance tech, for example, is obviously one.
There are Lemonades here, of course, so yes, insurance tech is an area. I actually think if I were investing myself, I would be looking for companies around machine learning and artificial intelligence and data management. I think that is, the banks in particular and financial services companies have access to so much information, and all of us have so much information that we can share to inform those decisions that are being made about us. So I would suggest that data analytics is the place that is going to become most exciting.
Claire, do you have any that you see as
she picked my one. I think InsurTech definitely is a domain that is raising, and also the domain of data and analytics. I will not have much more to add.
Any for you, Jay?
Yeah, I think we expect almost all of our companies to be using some sort of machine learning, certainly if they're focused on a consumer business. Let's wait for this. The more cutting edge stuff, I don't know, are we going to get drone deliveries of cash? I don't know. I'm actually, the insurance side is a little bit more challenging for me. I think I've seen just about every single little niche of insurance, you name it. There's two or three insurance companies, right, startups that are trying to tackle it. Some of them are just too small. I don't think they're truly broken. But I think, unfortunately, there's money that's been willing to fund them. But I think that's just a knee-jerk reaction because there's opportunity. It'll figure itself out.
Yeah. Let's maybe just moving towards the closing of this panel, but a couple of insights around where we see the fintech boom going. Is it going to bust? When's it going to bust? And the figures I've got from CB Insights is that between 2010 and 2015, $49.3 billion was invested in fintech companies. In Q1, $5.7 billion went into fintech companies, still increasing, still on the uptick. This is not sustainable, is it? Particularly when you've got valuations of companies that are disproportionate to what they're offering. I mean, I've seen quite a few companies that are getting revenues in the millions of dollars being valued in the billions of dollars, and, you know, 100 times valuation. It's ridiculous. It's not sustainable, is it?
And the valuations probably aren't sustainable. The investment in the sector is. I think the sector's massive, and there's so much to do. I think, unfortunately, the incumbent industry has been dealing with the very low-hanging fruit. The startups, I don't know, are you still a startup?
I don't think we get to say we're a startup anymore.
They're still moving much, much faster. I think you'll see more acquisitions from the incumbents to catch up. They probably won't all be paying the price that was the post-money of the last round of some of those unicorns, but the guys that are growing a real business, there's going to be a real opportunity for them.
Catherine, before I come to Claire, because I've got a specific question for Claire, but do you think it's going to continue?
Well, I think it would be consistent with my previous statement to say yes, because there's been innovation in this space for a long time. So whether it becomes 3.0 or 4.0, financial services is simply here to stay. We care about money. We care about managing the money, spending it, investing it, whatever those things are. And that's always going to be the case, and we're always going to need to keep up with whatever the technology developments are at the time, whether it's drone deliveries of cash or whether it's the demise of the retail bank. I think you're going to continue to see a lot of investment in that change.
And Claire, from a bank's viewpoint, do you think the banks will continue to engage and be as excited about these changes?
Yeah, we'll continue to engage, but I think the success of fintech will be defined by the customer adoption. I think it will be about, does it meet the customer needs? Does it solve a problem? Does it solve a customer problem only? And like, how is it working? And I think that's what we have yet to see in the years to come. I think on our side, we'll continue, you know, to support the ecosystem in the UK, working with the government, working with the regulator, be in sustainable innovation around the ecosystem in terms of offering frictionless access to banking, which will come only if we work together to this access or in other work we have been doing in open banking, which is about enabling the customer to access his data at any point in time, which is not a one single play of a bank or a startup, but is about how can we work together around these topics. So I think, you know, we'll continue to do this type of work. We will also continue to support startups in the UK to get off the ground through our accelerator with Startup Bootcamp, through the work we've done about sponsoring Open Collaboration Challenge, and continue the reciprocity which we see, which is we expose our mentors that are working with the fintech startups about providing, you know, like what they have learned over these years in the bank, and at the same time learning from a different culture, different ways about implementing and working, which will become the norm in the next years.
Okay, we need to move towards the wrap, but to wrap up, I'd like each of you to make one bold prediction so that when we get to Money Conference 2021, we can look back at what Catherine, Claire and Jay said and say whether it came true or not. So 2021, Money Conf, what's going to be the biggest thing that's changed in our world? Catherine.
I will boldly predict that all banks will open up their data to allow third parties to freely access that information.
Claire.
I think 2021 is not so far. What will become true is around more and more the aggregation and the usage of aggregator of the platform by customers that we are already seeing.
Jay?
I would guess that the very large incumbent banks, there's going to be only a handful of them that are, maybe it's the ones that are led by a technology CEO or the ones that invest in the tech platform, there's going to be a pretty significant difference in the scale of how these businesses grow versus the guys that right now are on the top. I think we're going to see a big bifurcation of some very large banks, and then the rest of them are going to be very small. There's probably going to be some consolidation.
I guess I've got two. One is obviously, because I'm biased, that there will be a consortium development of a shared ledger system for settlements across a globalized structure that's now in production rather than in discussion. And the second is that Germany tells Britain to get lost and get out of Europe. Thank you. Thank you. All right.